turned around, went back to the bus, and sat down on the bus. A few minutes later, 5 minutes later, the coach came out and said, "Harris, what's wrong?" I said, "The manager told me that they don't serve my kind in that restaurant." So the coach said, "What?" I said, "Yes." He said, "They don't serve my kind in the restaurant." So he said, "Okay, I'll be back in a minute." He went in and he got the whole team, and the team, they all left the restaurant. And the manager's in the door shouting out, "Wait a minute, we'll serve him, we'll serve him." And the coach said, "No, you won't serve any of us." And we got on the bus and we went to another restaurant. That was my first real experience on the basketball team. And there were a few other incidences where I had a problem and the team had a problem. We had one school in Illinois and they had a dog at under our basket. And even while we were trying to warm up, the dog was barking and barking and barking. They had a chain on the dog so that he could get right to the edge of the floor. And you couldn't shoot a layup, because if you shot a layup, you'd go underneath the basket and you'd be in his way and he would bite you. Mm-hmm. So during the game, at halftime, my coach said, "Well, Harris, go ask the referee if he would tell him to move the dog." And I went and asked the referee if he would have him to remove the dog. The referee said, I went back to the coach and the referee didn't remove the dog or have it removed. And the coach said, what happened? I said, "The referee told me to shut up and play ball." And that was it. So that was my experience on the basketball floor. And what are you? Do you have any other questions?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Okay, so first I'll ask you about, how was your experience in college? Do you remember the story of how the professor failed you?
Oh, yes. It wasn't just the professor. I had received my grades over the summer, and I had passing grades, and that meant I still was on the basketball team. I had my scholarship. Mm-hmm. And when I went back to school, everything was fine. I enrolled in my classes. But when basketball practice started, I got a letter from the dean of men saying that I was ineligible to play basketball. And so when I got the letter, I went to practice and I gave the letter to the coach. And the coach said, "Well, I don't know what this is about," he said, "but go on and change your clothes and join the practice." So I did. And then about a week later, I got another letter and said that it was reinstating what the original letter said, that you are not eligible to play. So I had no idea what had happened. And the letter said that I was academically ineligible to be on a basketball team. So I took the letter to the coach, and he said, "Okay." He went to see one of the deans, and the dean said, "Well, nobody should be making any changes to grades, because they had to ask me to go and change the grades." So anyway, the coach said, "Well," he polled all the other teams, and he said, "Well, if there had been a mistake made in his grades, that it was okay for me to play, and I would still be eligible to play in the conference." But another letter I got from the dean of men said no. So I had no idea what was going on, but I was ineligible to play basketball. So I finished out the year not playing basketball, and I came back the next year, and I had I enrolled, I paid my own way to school, and then there was a young lady who was at the dinner table with myself and my roommate and my roommate's girlfriend. My roommate was African American, and his girlfriend was African American, but his girlfriend's roommate was Caucasian. And so at the dinner table one night, she said, Harris, I want to talk to you. And I said, well, you can talk to me right now. We're among friends. She said, well, no, this, I think it's private. And I said, well, how come you can't tell me? She said, well, I want you to come over to the dorm after dinner, and we can talk. So I finally agreed. And she, after I met with her, she told me, she said, you know, I had been called over to the dean of women's office about you. I said, about me? She said, yes. Then she said that I had to stop dating you. And I said, well, we haven't been dating. She said, I know it. I said, so what did you tell him? She said, I told him it was none of her dime business who I dated. And she said, they called me back again, and the dean of men was there with her. And they told me, and she said, that was last semester. And she said that something was going to happen. And the dean of men said, yeah, something real bad is going to happen if you don't stop dating him. So she said, I said, well, didn't you notice I wasn't playing basketball? She said, well, I just thought you didn't want to play. I said, no, they changed my grades so that I was ineligible to play. So she said, oh, well, I'm sorry, but I had no idea. But by the time the semester was over, I had raised my grade point average and everything, and I got my scholarship back, and I was able to play. But that was something that was unexpected. And even my professors that went, they went along with the change of the grades. Oh yeah, well that was the grade that you were supposed to get, you know. And so my grades were changed. I was ineligible to play basketball, at least for that year. And I did fine the next year. So that was my experience. And the fact is, I was the captain of the basketball team.
And was that your sophomore year?
No, that was actually my junior year. And in my senior year, I was captain of the basketball team, and I was the most valuable player, voted the most valuable player on the team. So that was my experience on the basketball squad.
Got it. Okay.
Okay.
And how was your, you said you saw the I Have a Dream March?
Oh, yeah.
And was that the one actually, in Detroit or the one in?
The one that was in Detroit.
Okay.
And that was a precursor to the one that was in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And at the time, it was the largest march down the main avenue in Detroit, which was Woodward Avenue. My fiance and I marched in that parade.
Is that Grammy?
Yeah, that was Grammy. And she and I, when we got to the main place where they were having the stadium, inside stadium, and they were he gave his speech, we could not get in because it was, by the time we got there and with the parade, it was already at full capacity. And the they had speakers on the outside of the stadium around in the area so we could listen to the first part of I Have a Dream speech that was given by Reverend Martin Luther King. And it was at the time, it was the largest parade that he had actually led the parade. So that was my experience with the I Have a Dream speech.
Okay. And then, was the Black Panther going on at the around your time, or was that a little later?
I think that may have been just a little bit later, but I remember that They were actually recruiting people to go on the bus rides in the South. And I had a younger brother, my youngest brother, matter of fact, of the seven kids. He was about, maybe 13 or 14. And I found out that he had actually joined the bus ride. And the buses were loading up in downtown Detroit. And my mom sent me down there to get him because he was much too young to be on the bus ride.
Was he?
So I went
and
found him on the bus and got him off the bus so that he was not able to go on the Freedom Ride. And I think that to this day, I was not sure that I shouldn't have let him go. But anyway, he didn't go on the bus ride, the Freedom Bus Rides.
And how old was he?
He was about 13 or 14 at the time.
Okay. One second, I'm running something. Okay, and then you lived in a city or a suburb?
Oh, I lived in the city.
Okay, in downtown Detroit?
Not downtown, in one of the neighborhoods on the west side of Detroit.
Okay. And then were you ever like a part of like any peaceful protests that turned violent, or did you see any protests like that?
No, not at the time.
Okay. And then were you there for the Detroit riots?
Yes, I was.
Can you tell me
I was
there?
When the riots started, it started on 12th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend, I was going to Saginaw, Michigan the next morning. And it started at night. My friend called me, who was in the area where it started, and said, "Don't come this way. I know you're going out of town, but don't come through 12th Street." So he said, "It's people are starting to riot here." She said that somebody had threw a brick through a store window, and the police had raided a after hours place. And some of the people were arrested and put in the police wagons and taken away, but they left a crowd of people there, and those people were angry and they started a riot. Well, I went to Saginaw that morning, and I was getting ready that evening to come home, and I was in Saginaw and they turned the TV on. We could see the smoke coming up from where the fires had started in the city. So I told my wife that we would probably be better off staying in Saginaw for the night. So we spent the night in Saginaw and came home the next morning. And on the way home, just riding down some of the streets, we saw people with grocery carts. Some of them had food in them, some had different things. People had TVs, couches that they had taken during the riot. Smoke was coming up from everywhere. It was really a frightening scene. But we managed to get home safely, and we stayed in the house probably for a couple of days while it was going on in the National Guard was marching through. We could hear marching through the neighborhoods, and sometimes late at night you could hear gunfire, and it was a frightening scene. But luckily there was no fires or anything in my neighborhood, but on the main streets there were fires, and there were people looting and There were people being arrested. It was all it was chaos. But then they even had tanks going down one street. So it was quite a really scary scene. And that was my experience with the riot.
Got it. And then I forgot to ask you one more question. When we're talking about the Black Panther, were you in support of the Black Panther, or did you think that their method was too violent? Were you against it?
Well, I didn't know that much about them. The only thing that I knew about them was what I read in the papers and saw on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought some of the things that they were doing, like providing school kids mm-hmm. with lunches and so forth, that was a good thing. But the actual carrying of guns and what have you, I didn't think that was a good thing. I didn't go along with that part of it, the actual violent part of it. But some of the things that they did, I thought were exactly probably what they should have been doing. Marching was okay, but the carrying of weapons, I didn't think that was a good idea.
And then, did you witness any institutional racism, like in your job or in corporate or anything?
Well, yeah. When I worked at the summer that I wasn't in school, after I was ineligible to play basketball, mm-hmm. I was hired at a General Motors plant, and there were about, I'd say at least 12 people that got hired when I did, and they asked me to help some of the other guys fill out their applications. The Caucasian guys, there were some of them that couldn't read or write. So anyway, I helped them with their job applications, the papers they had to fill out. And so what happened is they put those guys on machines to run machines. They gave me a mop and a broom so that I could be a janitor. And I didn't really protest, but I could understand what was going on. I said, you know, now here I am, probably the most educated in the group, but they give me a mop and a broom. And actually, I stayed on the job about almost a year when I was going back to school. And I asked for I asked them to give me a leave so I could come back in the summer and work. And I was told that, no, I could not do that, that they would actually put on my record that I quit. So I said, well, how come I can't have a leave of absence when there are other people? I said, other white guys come in the summer, the kids from school, and they work in the summer and go back to school. And I was told, well, you don't need to go back to school. You have a good job, so maybe one day you might get a promotion. I said, a promotion? I said, well, what about them? He said, well, they need education. You don't need one. You can stay right here. So anyway, I ended up leaving anyway. And I later on worked at another GM plant in Saginaw in the summer while I was teaching. But that was my experience in the workplace.
Got it. What was like your job after that?
Oh, after I worked in the plant?
Yes.
Oh, well, after that, I had I got a teaching job.
Mm-hmm.
in Saginaw, in Saginaw Township, and I was probably the only African-American in the school system at that time in Saginaw Township, not the cities of Saginaw, but the Saginaw Township. And it was a good job, and I had no problems.
Mm-hmm.
No racial overtones or anything like that.
Okay. And how did you cope and deal with the constant threat of racism and being treated as a second-class citizen?
Well, that was, most of it was covert. It was not outright segregation, but when I lived in Saginaw, all African-American people lived on one side of town, except for very few people lived on the west side of town. They lived on the east side of town. And it was not easy to find housing for my wife and I. We were married after my first year of teaching, and we moved to Saginaw. But we had a difficult time finding housing, and we couldn't find housing on the west side of town, so we ended up on the east side of town. But my job was on the west side of town. But anyway, that in itself was a little inconvenient, but, you know, it was the way things were at the time.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think that's all. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Granddad.
All right, you're welcome, dear.
Have a nice day.
Okay, you too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.